quiet start to the week in the grain and the livestock markets, but it is a report week, and funds have basically married a position and seem to be very comfortable. And there is some rain in the forecast, but the dollar is sliding and U.S. grains are becoming more competitive in the export markets. We'll learn what it all means for price and trends next.
Live from a GDU-rich environment via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we'll chat with Terry Lynn from the Lynn Group. And right after the news, Jack Scoville from the Price Futures Group. And in the final segment, Kerry Artek launches another Artek Attack. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now, here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
A GDU-rich environment? Is that how you described it? What was that?
Absolutely. A GDU-rich environment. The sun is shining, brother. It's hot out.
Yeah.
It's so great.
Oh, the corn can feel it. The corn can feel it. Mm-hmm. There's a few areas out there that are a little dry that are kind of like, let's get some moisture. But like we talked to Michael Clark from BAMWX this morning, it sounds like those areas have got a decent chance for rain over the next, call it 48 hours.
Change going to come. And that storm is moving its way up out of the Gulf, baby. Have you been watching it today?
A little bit. Yes, I have been watching it. It's weird when you see that a tropical storm is supposed to bring rain from the Delta to Wisconsin.
Yes.
That seems just kind of a... But it's a powerful little guy, and he's going to hold together and make his move into the middle of the country. Yeah, so just not a lot of action in the grains today. Corn did what it could with a solid start to the session and some bumpy trade in between the open and the close. Beans under a little bit of pressure today, some mixed trade in wheat. We'll find out what's going on there with the spring wheat market from Terry here in just a little bit. Cattle trade was mixed, some strength in the nearbys, pressure in the back months. Feeder cattle were under pressure. Lean hogs were higher to start the week. Class 3 milk futures, man, get this, dude. Davis, June class 3 milk was up another 32 cents to 2020.
Whoa.
July milk, we've been in this territory before, but July milk was at 28 cents at 18.95. August milk was up a dime, 17.48. So, and then we had some mixed trade in the cotton. We'll get to that here in just a little bit. All right, let's get going. What was moving the markets?
Well, Chip, the U.S. dollar index traded lower today after the greenback saw a pause in the downtrend on Friday. The Russian ruble today traded to the highest level since March 5. Currency trade is helping to limit selling interest in wheat futures. However, lackluster demand for U.S. wheat throughout the marketing year has meant very few traders are looking for long-term support from the export side of the wheat market. Export inspections of wheat in the weekend of June 4 were at the low end of trade expectations. They came in at nearly 433,000 metric tons. July hard red winter wheat 0.75 cents lower, 460.5. July soft red dropped 3.75 cents to 511.5. July spring wheat gained 5.5 cents to close at 524.25. Chip.
Yeah, you know, we get the crop progress, crop condition report this afternoon. I wonder if some expectations for a bit of a pullback in that spring wheat crop condition or something like that might be helping to support that spring wheat market. Like I said, we'll talk to Terry about that here in just a bit.
Corn futures gapped higher to start the week, fell back to fill the gaps, and then rebounded to close near the opening range. The middle of the Corn Belt is expected to see rains this week as Tropical Storm Cristobal makes its way into Wisconsin by Wednesday. Another system is expected to move in from the west at the same time, bringing needed rains to the western Corn Belt. Export inspections of corn in the weekend of June 4 totaled 1.1 million metric tons. That was in the top half of trade expectations, helping to support corn prices. July corn futures 2.5 cents higher, but 3.33¾. September corn firmed 2¾ cents to 3.38¼. December corn closed at 3.47½. That's up 2¼ today.
Yeah, it'd be nice to see a little bit more activity on the daily export announcements for corn. I'm not saying that we need it every day, but if you're going to move to the upside and get the funds to cover those short positions, you probably better give them some fuel for the short covering. And right now, we're just not doing much of that.
U.S. soybeans from the Gulf and from the PNW are now the cheapest sources of soybeans, limiting selling interest in futures as traders ramp up demand expectations. However, export inspections of soybeans in the weekend of June 4 came in well below trade expectations and totaled just 213,000 metric tons. The lack of a daily export sales announcement from USDA this morning also put soybean trade on the defensive early in the session. July bean futures 3 cents lower, 864.5. August soybeans slipped 2.5 cents, 867.5. November bean futures closed at 878. That's down a penny and a half today.
Yeah, you know, I think we kind of spoiled soybeans last week by rolling out those day after day after day export sales announcements. And that's why last week, I mean, we had one, two, three big moves to the upside on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Now, a little mostly steady market on Friday and a setback today. So give it some export demand to talk about, and we can get this thing going back to the upside again.
Well, Chip, July cotton was 98 points lower, 60.81. December cotton fell 61 cents, 60.37.5. On the livestock side, last week's cattle slaughter was 4.4% below year-ago levels, but that's a big-time improvement from the trough in beef processing caused by coronavirus. August live cattle futures 15 cents higher, 96.32.5, and Dease slipped 15 cents, 103.67.5. August feeders a buck 10 lower, 133.07.5. Big Saturday kill in hog slaughter last week or over the weekend. July lean hogs a nickel higher, 53.97.5, and Dease gained 87.5 to 55.27.5. Chip.
Yeah, hog slaughter on the week up 1.7% from the same week last year. So we're pointed in the right direction, no doubt about it. Thank you, Davis. Let's bring in Jack Scoville, Price Futures Group. How you doing, Jack?
Doing great. How about yourself?
Not too bad. Kind of a quiet start to the week. Did anything catch your eye?
Well, it was good that corn was able to build on their gains. Still, the funds still doing some short covering over there. The only other markets that really caught my eye were the oats and the rice, which were supported by the coronavirus closing down the United States, people staying at home. Now that people are venturing out, less need for oats for oatmeal and things like that. Less need for rice in the pantry, and let's look out below.
Really? Wow. Okay. Well, I'll have to check that out here later. What about over in the livestock trade, Jack? Anything in particular? Had a nice start to the week for hogs.
Yeah, it did, and I think that the fact that the kills are improving over there is really helping out. You know, we had been paying attention to the cutout values, but those seem to be leveling off, or at least hanging in at least reasonably well, whereas the hog prices themselves are starting to creep higher. And that seems to be supporting the hog market and through here.
Yeah, no doubt about it. It'd be sure be nice if we could get to the point where there's some demand and some some packer pull for market-ready hogs, but it still feels like we're a ways off from that happening. Jack, thank you so much. I got to check out what's going on in oats and rice and take a closer look at that. Thank you, buddy.
No problem. Take care. All
right. Yep, that's Jack Scoville, Price Futures Group. Coming up next, we've got Terry Lynn from the Lynn Group. We've got a lot to talk about in the grain markets. Probably start with wheat, Terry. I want to know why that spring wheat market performed the way that it did today. Terry Lynn, up next, right here on AgriTalk. Everyone talks big yields, but Channel Seedsmen deliver advice that yields results. Every season, Channel Seedsmen match elite seed products with unmatched service and support to push the performance of every acre. That's why you can count on Channel for what you need to make the most of your season. You don't have to be a Channel customer to take advantage of this support. Visit channel.com/agritalk to sign up and receive expert advice that yields.
In the morning, you're coffeeed up and you're thinking. In the afternoon, you've calmed down, but you're still thinking. We're here all day. AgriTalk.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me, of course. And
yep.
Yeah, so Jack gave me a little homework to do there because I'll admit, you know, I looked at oats when they early last week, I guess, when they were still going to the upside, but I haven't looked at rice for a little while. And both of those markets can be indicators of what to expect from the more heavily traded corn market, soybean market, wheat markets. But so, you know, they can be indicators, but sometimes that correlation runs a little fast and loose. So I don't know. Let's find out what Terry Lynn thinks about that. Terry Lynn from the Lynn Group. Terry, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
Hey, Chip, doing all right. Always great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Glad that you could make time for us. So did you hear Jack talking about rice and oats falling back on expectations that, you know, demand for the oat products, the oatmeal and rice for the pantry starting to fall off with people getting back to the restaurants? I mean, we do watch those markets. It's just the influence sometimes is there, sometimes it's not.
Right. Oats and rice are, you know, to the broader grain spectrum, you know, not to put anybody on the outside looking in, but somewhat of fringe markets. But yeah, we do have, we do trade them, and some people manage their risk through those markets. And yeah, absolutely. Sometimes those markets can be kind of the canary in the coal mine for corn. And I think what has happened in oats and particularly in the rice market is, you know, in rice, you had a big short that was caught in that market. And so we had a big squeeze there. And that's tied to tightening carryouts in the market. And so we, you know, it looks like in oats and rice both, we've had somewhat of a blow off type of trade in those markets. Again, my fundamental tightness to both of those is kind of on the fringe, but I do, I do watch from the outside and pay attention. And, you know, maybe there has been some positive influence on the way up that's helped particularly the corn market maybe get a little bit more confidence from where we've been, at least.
Okay. All right. Very cool. Very cool. So I said at the end of the last segment, Terry, that we needed to find out from you what is happening in that spring wheat trade. What are your thoughts? It went against the winter wheat contracts today.
Sure. Yeah, it did stand out among the wheat classes as having a pretty decent day, five higher, five and a half higher. The only thing I really see around spring wheat right now, you do have a Canadian cold front that does move in. I think that there is some sort of some level of frost concern tied to it. The level of concern, I think, is probably on the low end of the spectrum. If there was a real frost concern here on June, you know, the first half of June, let's say, we wouldn't be up just a nickel. We'd be up quite a bit more. But I think that there is an element of weather concern for spring wheat. The other thing that I did notice was in the export inspections report from today, China took another cargo of wheat off the PNW. I wasn't certain whether that was either spring or white wheat. Normally they would be a buyer of either white or spring. They have bought some hard wheat here this year, which was good to see also, but this one off the PNW is most likely either spring or white wheat. So between the weather and a little bit of Chinese demand around these markets, you can have some gyrations like this, a little bit of a bounce in the wheat in the spring class.
Yeah. You know, Terry, that's a good point right there. When we talk about China and trade, soybeans come right up, pork comes right up. I am reminded by some people, mostly Michelle. Thank you very much, Michelle. But I'm reminded that China can be a good buyer of U.S. wheat when the market conditions are right, and it feels like because of some of the currency fluctuations that we're going through right now, U.S. wheat is getting right for China, right?
Well, yes. That's one of the biggest changes that we have seen in the grain market over the past 30 days is the restructuring of the currency relationships, and not just the dollar, but man, especially when you put it up against the Brazilian currency. And I think from last month's record wide relationship to the Brazilian real, we're 20% off of that high tick. And so that's a 20% move in the currency relationship, and that is substantial. Now, considering where we started the year back in January, we still have some room to go in terms of kind of normalizing and correcting that. But we've got a head full of steam right now. And I think, you know, when the guys are talking about some of these macro influences in the marketplace and looking at what's going on economically here in the United States and globally with the amount of stimulus dollars that are being pumped into the economy and will continue to be pumped into the economy for quite some time, this dollar is potentially overvalued by quite a bit. And if you're going to see the dollar break down by a substantial amount from where we're at today, well, that certainly fosters an inflationary environment that, while yes, it does help our export competitiveness in a lot of these commodities, just in a lot of different markets, we've had a lot of conversations about, you know, what meat prices and grain prices and all sorts of commodities that can benefit from in value if you're going to enter this kind of new inflationary phase here at some point.
Yeah. So Terry, when you talk about the dollar, I mean, how much do you follow the dollar index, or do you feel like you need to watch the Russian ruble and the Brazilian real to really get a handle on what that currency relationship is doing to export demand for U.S. grain?
Well, a lot of the time they are working in an inverse. And so if the dollar is weakening, the ruble is gaining, or the real is gaining. And so there tends to be that type of relationship. But when you want to kind of zero in and look at the specific relationship of soybean values and compare them to Brazil and what they would pencil out on a landed basis to China, yeah, you look at the direct currency relationship, right, and factor that in, because, yeah, while the dollar has had quite a bit of movement, you know, the Brazilian real is the one that really has had movement like we've never seen before, record movement on its own. And so while the dollar's been here many times, we're not exactly out of any, you know, breaking any new ground in the dollar. It's more the relationship that is directly impacting the competitive stance of U.S. beans to the Brazilian real. But that's not all that's gone on either. There's ripple effects to that as well, as you've seen the real, what looks like has a good bottom and is now rallying. If you're looking at the futures chart, what that has done is you've seen the Brazilian farmer all of a sudden slow down their remaining sales here in their current marketing year, as well as next year's crop, where they had a big head start there too. So they're tapping the brakes on new sales, and you're seeing the Brazilian basis also firm up quite dramatically. I would say 30 or maybe 45 days ago, you had Brazilian FOB offers for soybeans, 65 over, something like that. And here today, going home, you're about 115 over. So between the currency and the basis, yeah, that's taken us from being uncompetitive to being the cheapest supplier to China through the end of our marketing year.
Okay.
Or into the end of our calendar year, really, until the new crop Brazilian beans are available.
Right. Okay. Now, that's true out of the Gulf. Is the same true out of the PNW? I heard that it was.
Yes. Okay. I show PNW beans actually cheaper than Gulf beans by about $3 a ton.
Okay.
And that's on a landed basis to China for right up front in July.
Man, that's good news. Good news. You know, I don't know what the supply availability is out of the Dakotas and northern Nebraska to supply that market, and I should throw Minnesota into that as well. But sure feels like if they want to get beans to the PNW, we can get beans to the PNW, can't we, Terry?
Yeah, I mean, there's a price for everything, of course, and you really have a PNW seasonal that you know, takes you through old crop, this current crop that's already in the bin, not the new crop that I show PNW offers through August, basically, before they kind of dry up.
All right, very good. Very good. Hey, we are talking with Terry Lynn today. Terry is with the Lynn Group. Terry, when we come back, I can't believe that we're to the end of this segment. When we come back for the next segment, you mentioned the stimulus dollars. In this conversation, I'm going to go back about 3 weeks, maybe even 4 weeks, to a period when it seemed like everybody that was on AgriTalk wanted to talk about the stimulus dollars creating an inflationary environment and bringing support into the ag commodities. When we come back, I want to start there and see if what your thoughts are on that potentially happening. We're talking to Terry Lynn on AgriTalk. It's time for headline news featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers First Thing today. The week ahead in Washington, D.C., a House Judiciary hearing on the death of George Floyd, USDA's monthly supply and demand report, more U.S. businesses reopening, a presser by Fed Chairman Jerome Powell, and continued discussion on details and timing of the next COVID-19 relief package. Most states are allowing continued use of dicamba. EPA Administrator Andrew Wheeler said in a statement late Friday that it is assessing all avenues to mitigate the impact of the court's decision on farmers. Chinese bean imports up 27.4% from a year ago. Major backlogs of ships waiting to load sugar at Brazil's largest ports. Hey, check out all that ProFarmer has to offer by going to tryprofarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. You're listening to AgriTalk, where the conversation begins. Join us at 855-4-TALK-AG.
Man, I've been working too hard, 10-hour days and I'm tired.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me, and we are talking with Terry Lynn from the Lynn Group today. Before we get back to that conversation, let's go ahead and recap how the markets closed. Davis.
Chip, July hard red winter wheat 0.75 cents lower, 460.5. July soft red dropped 3.75 cents to 511.5. July corn futures 2.5 cents higher, 333.75. December corn closed at 347.5. That's up 2.25 cents today. July soybean futures 3 cents lower, 864.5. November bean futures closed at 878. That's down 1.5 cents. July cotton was 98 points lower, 60.81. August live cattle 15 cents higher, 96.32.5. August feeders 1.10 lower, 133.07.5. And July lean hogs a nickel higher, 53.97.5. There's your quick market recap. Back to you, Chip.
All right. Thank you so much, Davis. Terry Lynn from the Lynn Group is my guest today. The stimulus dollars that you were talking about, Terry, can that create or contribute to an inflationary environment that could bring some of that much needed buying into the ag commodities?
Well, that's a good question, and it's a difficult one to answer because I think it's complicated, and more money in the economy for people to spend. That's going to stimulate more demand for a lot of things. But in terms of the grains, that's probably more of a trickle down demand item. Where, you know, in the case of corn, if the consumer has more money in his pocket and he's going back out and eating at restaurants again, you're going to see more demand for beef. Or in the case of soybeans and soybean meal, more feed demand for pork or chicken. And so in the case of going back to corn, your fuel use goes up, and so your ethanol demand goes up. And so it's all kind of down the line here a little bit. I think it is something that helps, but I also want to caution in that statement of inflationary reaction in the markets is that you do still have supply and demand realities that you have to work with, and particularly in this corn market and the type of production that once again government involvement has helped to promote big acres and more demand or more supply than we need, assuming Mother Nature doesn't turn around on us here. So it's kind of a two-sided coin. That's what makes government markets, the worst kind of markets, and trying to assess risk reward, because they can kind of skew natural supply and demand relationships, where if we did not have the government around and sending checks out to producers, would they still be trying to plant the amount of acreage that we are looking at here at these price levels? And the answer is no. And so we're promoting bigger acres and kind of kicking the can down the road from that aspect as far as the impact of low prices limiting production. The government, again, on the other side of that coin, these dollars that are coming into the economy are going to help support with demand on certain levels and certain timings. They're all kind of different.
Yeah, yeah. And those dollars are there to, you know, to quote-unquote fix a problem that was created by the government in the first place in many ways.
Right.
And that being the trade war. It's just infuriating trying to be a fundamental analyst in this kind of an environment, isn't it, Terry?
It makes it tough. And yeah, having to talk and write about it day in and day out, sometimes you just want to throw your hands up in the air. And one day we'll get to a point where we're not talking about what the government's going to do. And we can.
When do you think that might be, Terry?
that's a tough one. I think that there's a lot of politics at play here at the moment that is maybe delaying the phase one trade agreement from being fully applied. But you had the currency at the beginning of the year that also was a factor there too. And so there's a lot of elements, I think, that are that come into play here that you have to acknowledge. There isn't just this one thing. If you can get past the president, the election, and get to where China says, we just need to move forward with our trade commitment. If you could take the politics out of it, you might see them start to live up to some of these ag purchase volumes. And I'm not saying that they're not going to do that today, but I'm saying that you've had this currency move, which was a significant factor in pushing back the amount of U.S. soybeans they're going to purchase. And you have politics, where I think they are targeting the Trump administration because they believe that they may have a better negotiation without the Trump administration calling the shots.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Interesting. Boy, Terry, right now it doesn't feel like the corn or soybean market, or wheat market for that matter, is really carrying much yield risk. Do you see it anywhere in the markets?
Well, as far as corn and soybeans go, it's really hard to identify any part of the country that has any real problem at this point in the growing season. I see the trend in crop conditions as one of improvement. The recent return of warmth and sunshine is really just what the crops needed to build those growing degree days. And now in the wheat market, you do have an issue with the southern plains and dryness down there. And looking at the temperature forecast in Kansas, getting up in the mid-upper 90s. Now, with that said, you're starting to advance winter wheat harvest, and you're moving further and further north. And so, what's the impact going to be at this point? That's certainly debatable. But you do have an issue with dryness there. And as we have seen in the past, when you do have a drought footprint, there is the potential for that footprint to expand. We don't see that today, but there is always that potential. And the weather forecast today, the feature is the tropical system moving up from the Gulf and bringing pretty substantial moisture up the center of the country, kind of hugging the Mississippi River to the west. And that will be welcomed. And then after that, you kind of move into a drier pattern for a couple of weeks at least. And but temperatures are not threatening. And so overall, I see it as a favorable environment for corn and soybean development. And you know, the market doesn't see much need for risk premium, and I, at this point, I have to agree.
Well, and it certainly has made the professional trading funds comfortable on the short side of the corn market, hasn't it?
Well, that's the other development here is the commitment of traders showed the fund short in corn and in soybean meal, perhaps a little bit bigger than what was expected. And so you've got some short covering that's helping to drive the gains here in the corn market. But with corn, and as has been the case and certainly was today too, every time we punch up and get into a new high here for this move, you're met with a pretty good producer selling here as the market's making new highs. And so what you're seeing is this kind of classic transfer of risk where the funds are getting less short and the producer is transferring his long bushel risk and kind of getting less long. And that's what should happen. And I think that's what we're seeing here. But it's also what is going to kind of limit rally potential here in the corn market, unless you introduce some sort of weather element to spook the funds, it's going to be more of an orderly transfer of that risk.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Those are the least amount. Those are the least fund short covering that there is when it's orderly. You want it to get out of hand and get the funds scrambling for the exits when they're short as they are, Terry. And
it makes for more excitement, that's for sure.
It certainly does. Okay, we got the supply and demand report coming our way on Thursday. Do you feel an urgency to do anything on risk management, corn, soybeans, and wheat heading into those supply and demand reports?
Anytime you're going into a USDA report, you need to be looking at what your position is and what your exposure is, and looking at different ways to kind of mitigate that risk. Now, this June WASD is not typically a major market mover.
Right.
You're really just looking for some minor adjustments and nothing. No major surprises, and that would be kind of normal. With, you know, most traders have the June 30th report circled on their calendar, where you're going to get the update on acreage and quarterly stocks, and that usually is a market mover. But as far as Thursday's crop report, what can you do? And the least expensive way to address risk exposure is going and looking at your weekly options, where your week two options that go off the board on Friday. You can spend a penny or two and define your risk basically and you know, sleep better. And you know, if nothing comes of it and you're out a penny or two, you know, that's the cost of the insurance to kind of protect your position. And many times, you know, when you go through these reports you do catch a surprise, and if I'd only spend a couple of pennies on that put, or if I'd only spent a penny on that call, it would have saved a lot of dollars in the big picture. But that's one of the great things about these weekly options. They give you a low cost approach to kind of getting risk under control, because we've seen it over and over again. The USDA can always come out and surprise with something,
that's
even
right.
If you're not, you know, by definition, you're not expecting it. But
right,
that's what the options are.
Terry, we are out of time. Good advice there on those short-term options. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you later.
This season, while work for you may have changed, our season is underway. American agriculture farms on for our family and yours.
Davis, I cannot believe how fast those two segments went.
Terry was good. A lot of good ideas in there too, and just very practical stuff. Yeah.
Yes, and there at the end, I said short-term options. I meant to say short-dated options. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Yeah. But give them a look. If you feel like you're exposed on your price risk, one way or the other, going into those supply and demand reports on Thursday, give those short-dated options a look and see if, like Terry said, for a penny or two, you could get some quote-unquote surprise insurance in place that will help you get through the end of the week and any potential surprises that come in that supply and demand report. So they're always worth looking at, I think. They can provide that security going into a report like that. All right, it's Monday. Let's take another look at the charts. We got Kerry Artak, Artak Advisory. How you doing, Kerry?
I'm doing great, Chip. Thanks for having me again.
You betcha, man. Hey, last week it started to feel good. It started to feel like we had some momentum that was starting to build. Kick us off with July wheat. What are you looking at?
Well, you know, the broader wheat market still remains stable into later summer, holding above 484 even. We settled today at 511.5, so, you know, we've got a appreciable distance to drop before we even test 484 even. But if we do, you know, over the next week or two, it can contain selling through summer, and above which, you know, the broader wheat market remains in a longer-term consolidative framework, which is to say it does allow recovery over the next several months up into the 590 to 615 even region. So, you know, on that point, while 524 even above the market can contain weekly highs, if we close Friday above 524 even, that would likely yield continued gains by the end of July into that 590 to 615 region. It's a wide 25-cent range of long-term resistance that can contain buying into next year. It's a long-term four-year channel top way up there at 615 even. Now, downside, a meaningful sell signal does emerge if July wheat places a settlement Friday for the week itself below 484 even. That would then indicate 418 even over the next few months where the broader market can bottom out through the balance of the year. I'll continue with July soybeans. Okay. I'm sort of repeating myself here. You know, we're holding between two big areas. We actually approached it over the last few days, 891.5 to the upside. We got to 873.5 just a few days ago, and 774 even downside. These are the broader bracketed parameters that can contain selling in and buying into later summer. And so, you know, now that we've rallied to within a few percentage points of 891.5, this market can rotate back over the next several months into the 770s. I don't have a signal for that per se. It's just that we are approaching, you know, this longer term ceiling. And so the market can fall back into later summer into the mid 770s. But, you know, if we were to close the week Friday above 891.5, that would actually indicate bullish continuation into later summer. 965 even then considered a 2 to 3 month target where the broader market can top out through the balance of the year. Now, downside certainly out of reach, but a weekly settlement below 774 even would signal 675 even within 2 to 3 months where the broader bean market should place an annual low. But to sort of reiterate, we're in this big two-sided framework between 891.5 upside, 774 even down, and we've come within about 2 percentage points of testing that ceiling over the last few days. So the market is susceptible to falling back now into July trade. And finally, August live cattle, very similar situation here. A buy signal from early May still remains intact this week above 93.90, which can contain selling into July, and above which I'm still expecting price gains over the next 3 to 5 weeks into the 106 handle, 106.50 to be precise, where the broader cattle market can top out through summer. Now, downside, a settlement Friday below 93.90 signals 88.95 by the end of next week. And so 88.95 is secondary long-term support, also able to contain selling into July. And that is the point, 88.95, to settle below on a weekly basis for setting the broader market on a bearish path into July. I would then expect 76.50 by the end of July, where the AUG contract can bottom out into expiration. So to summarize the outlook for the next month or so, constructive above 93.90, expecting 106.50 over the next 3 to 5 weeks. And then we turn negative with a weekly settlement below 88.95, 76.60, I'm sorry, 76.50, then expected over the following 3 to 5 weeks. And that's about all I got there, Chip.
All right. Hey, we got just a minute or two left here.
Sure.
You know, corn made another move, another high close. Let's see, we're at the highest now since highest close since April 13th.
Right.
Feeling any better in here?
Well, you know, I think I mentioned in last week's show that if we close the week above 331 even, that's constructive through the rest of June. We settled at 331.25, so it doesn't get much closer than that. Yes, it's a buy signal. I'm tentatively in the bullish camp up into the 360s, but I really want to see how Friday settles out. I'd like to see yet another higher settlement on the week that would be above 331.25, and that would sort of lock in that near-term buy signal by near-term 3 to 5 week rally into the 362 even region where the broader market can tap out through the balance of the year. We actually remain heavy a long-term, ultra-long-term through the rest of the year below 362 even, but we could get a nice counter trend pop to the upside over the next few weeks if we can close this week higher on the week itself, 331 and a quarter above that, and we're off to the races. Otherwise, this market is prone to failing, and if we close back below 331 even on Friday, I'm very suspicious of the ability for this market to make gains into July.
Excellent work. Excellent work. Thank you, Kerry. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Chip. See you then.
You bet. You bet. That's Kerry Artak, Artak Advisory. He's got a free two-week trial waiting for you at artakadvisory.com. You know, some people were questioning whether or not this was a GDU-rich environment or not, Davis.
Oh, really? Really?
They were. They were. You know, something about, you know, it maxes out at 86 degrees. Well, still don't lose ground over 86 degrees. They just don't count from 86 to, say, 94. At Minnesota, at MN, Weed Wizard. Mark, thanks, buddy. Appreciate all the work you did for us on that, bud. Thank you for that. Argument just like that.
Just
I love
like
it.
That?
I love it, yes. National Weather Service 610 day. This is for June 14th through the 18th. It has got above normal temperatures in the Western Corn Belt, normal to below normal in the Central and Eastern Corn Belt, below normal precipitation expected over the entire region. Hey, for Davis and for producer Joe Stackler, thank you for listening today. Tomorrow morning, former USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack. Tomorrow afternoon, Chip Nellinger, Blue Reef Agri-Marketing, right here on AgriTalk.